Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a marketing expert, sports fanatic, and an entrepreneur. Just over 7 years ago, he started a web development company called Loud Rumor. Since then, the business has evolved into a marketing and lead generation company. During this conversation, we'll hear the story of why during the past year, they've niched down to become a marketing and lead generation company exclusively for fitness studios to get more clients. Now, let's hack Mike Arce. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Snappa, the fastest way for entrepreneurs to create graphics. Getting your business up and running is hard, and growing it is another hurdle altogether. It seems like we never have enough time to do all the things that we know we should be doing in our businesses. The things that matter. The things that will help us stand out and grow. Creating awesome Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest images can and will allow your business and message to go wide and find your true fans. But creating images that look great and getting shared is hard, and it's time-consuming. Whether you need a blog post image, a social media post, or even a complete infographic, Snappa saves you time every step of the way. Think of how long it took you to create an image for your last blog post. Here's how it works with Snappa. You start with the perfect image dimensions, perfectly sized in one click. Then you get a head start with pre-made templates. Just stop staring at that blank screen. Then you find free high-resolution stock photos right inside of Snappa. Then you add text, graphics, and effects in seconds. Literally, even for somebody like me. Then you schedule and share your graphics instantly on social media, completely without leaving Snappa. Done. Now you get back to running your business. Snappa was built to make graphic design easy for entrepreneurs. Right now, I have a special offer. Go to snappa.io/hack. And make 2017 the year you start looking like the real business that you are. Stop wasting time. Use Snappa. Go to snappa.io/hack and you'll get a 14-day free trial without even using a credit card. That's snappa.io/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Mike, welcome to the show.
What's up, John? How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really glad you're here, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
We're going to have a ton of fun, man.
Nice. So what do you say? Should we jump into it?
Let's do it.
All right. Mike, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Biggest contributor would definitely be relationship building. I think that's something that I learned the value of working at more and more as I've gone on. So in the beginning of the business, it was more of me just working hard and seeing if I could figure everything out on my own. And over time, I accidentally got a mentor. It was this guy that just took me under his wing. I didn't even know he was doing it. And then I realized that I was learning a lot from him. And then he had told me the value of finding mentors that are strong in the areas that I may need strengthening in. And man, I can't tell you how many I've had. I would probably say like 15 or 20 different people that I look at as mentors, along with probably 15 hired coaches on top of that. That has been the biggest contributor, just networking and always knowing I have somebody I can call if I need to know more about something.
I love that. I love the idea of not just like that whole hustle, head down, working hard like you start with, but the idea of building relationships. But let's go back quickly to this you had a mentor by accident? You didn't realize you did? How did that happen?
Well, because I didn't really know. When I heard mentor back then, I was thinking like, you know, sensei, like, I don't know, something totally different. And so I wasn't looking for a mentor. I didn't think that was something that people had normally. And I met this guy at this random like cocktail party I went to, and he was the CFO of Cold Stone. So he was there from when they had 40 stores, and his tenure was until they had over 1,000. So guy had some really good business sense, and me and him, he and I kicked it off, and we were having a really good time joking around. He asked me about my business and he said, you know, hey, if you'd ever like to go to lunch and talk business, you know, we totally can. I was totally green. I didn't know a lot of what I'm doing today, you know, and so normally I'm a talker. That's, you know, my personality. I'm very outgoing. And I think for the first time at that lunch, for the first time, I was like about an hour and a half straight of nothing but just sitting there listening, you know, and it was great. I was intrigued by everything he was saying. The questions he was asking were so great, made me think. And, you know, he decided, hey, you know, what do you think about meeting up this Saturday and maybe getting breakfast, talk a little bit more? And I said, sure. So we met on Saturday and we just decided to make it a regular thing. So for like 9 months, we met every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Paradise Bakery. And we just talked business, which really was him coaching me, which is cool.
That's awesome. So I'm not a sports person at all. I'm not against sports. I don't know much about it.
Right.
But I know that this kind of comes from that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but do you think the fact that you were quote unquote coachable was the reason why, like how you said, I normally the talker, I listened for 1 hour and that gave the person the satisfaction that you were actually trying to absorb what he was telling you. So therefore he was willing to share with you for 9 months.
Right. Yeah. I was always an athlete. So in high school and before high school as well, I was in basketball and I really always wanted to be the best one on the team. And I knew that that would be more likely to happen if I were to listen more than if I just kind of talked. You can't talk and learn at the same time. It's impossible. So then when I got out of high school, I came to Arizona and I started getting into martial arts and I competed pretty heavily out here in Arizona and across the country as well. And, you know, in martial arts, if you've ever taken or any of the listeners ever take it, you know that you don't just like talk out of place. You follow line. There's an instructor and, you know, he's your mentor. He's your sensei. And maybe that's where that whole thing came from, right? But you just listen, you learn, and you execute what you're told to do. And so I think a lot of that, you know, however many years I was doing martial arts, that was a lot of me learning to listen and pay attention and focus.
Nice. I like it. So let's go back to this time because you've been running Loud Rumor now for over 7 years. And I'm assuming that this story kind of correlates to that beginning. But can you kind of take us back to, I'm not sure if you had businesses before Loud Rumor, but sort of to that time where you realized, I guess, that you were sort of entrepreneurial and that you needed to start a business.
Well, I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur meant until I was one. I never heard of that word, really, I don't think. I just was that detached from that network, that world. My family and a lot of men in my family that are older than me, they're all business owners and they own little local businesses here and there, but they don't even call themselves entrepreneurs, I don't think. They just run a really great service and they do great by their customers. When I was, you know, in high school, I made money a lot of little different ways, you know, no drugs or anything like that, but just, you know, I had my ways of like finding a way to buy stuff and resell it. Like a lot of, you know, people, you hear their stories, is no different. But I didn't attach that to me doing that for a living one day. And I had 22 jobs. I was an entrepreneur all the time. I actually worked at 22 different places.
Wow.
and had 22 different employers. So I just was not good at staying at the same place or being kept at the same place. And first thing that I started was a personal training company. And that was great. I loved it and ended up selling that and went back into the workforce and then started an agency, which is where I'm at today. And we changed a lot of it as we went. But, you know, I didn't start the agency because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I started the agency because the economy was shit, really. And there was nobody hiring and I couldn't get a job. And I was 3 months behind on everything. And I had a baby on the way and I had to figure it out. So I had to make money. And so I just started making money by selling websites to people here in the United States and having people in the Philippines do it for about a third of the cost. And then it transformed into this.
It's a lot less romantic of an answer that you had. You had no choice. You had to make money, so you started it. But that's usually the case.
Love with it after. I fell in love with it after. Exactly. I don't want it to be misunderstood and think that like I don't have a passion for entrepreneurism. Right now, this is my love. I love doing this, what I'm doing every day, and leading my team and all that's exciting. And I can imagine going to do something else. But I'm grateful for that accident, you know, that the way the economy was and that it had to put me in this position to figure it out.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, there's that famous quote from Steve Jobs, right? I mean, the dots don't make sense going through it. But looking back, it's like, oh, yeah, there's me.
Yeah.
It's like hustling, selling stuff all the way through high school. And OK, it makes sense.
Right.
But before we get too far, I'm fascinated by this idea of the generation older than us. We're business owners, but we're entrepreneurs. Or like there's this new entrepreneur thing, I think, that's coming or has come. And is different, but do you now, like when you stated sort of the two differences and how you didn't even consider yourself entrepreneurial, but your family was business owners, do you see sort of a difference between the two? Or do you now consider yourself entrepreneurial and a business owner, or is there a difference?
Well, yeah, I think there's a difference. I think you're definitely both. I don't think you are necessarily both, though. So for example, I think you could be a business owner, not necessarily be an entrepreneur. But I don't think you could be an entrepreneur and not own a business. So when you're, to me, an entrepreneur is a master of design or somebody that works hard to master design. That includes, you know, the design of the culture of the company, the design of the product, the design of the systems that are going to be making this company run the way it does, the design of the relationships that you build along the way, and being able to take something and replicate it, even if it's in a different industry. Just because what you've mastered wasn't necessarily the service that you're selling, but the system that allows that service to be successful and profitable. So then, you know, same type of business I run right now, I could take a lot of what I've learned and I believe I can apply that to many other industries that are very irrelevant to what I do today because of that. I think business owners that are not entrepreneurs, I don't think they can do that. So you take somebody like my father, for instance. Great guy, and I mean, totally successful in the jewelry industry and did very well and did right by his customers, but he's not entrepreneurial. I think if you gave him a business to start and take off the ground right now, if it wasn't jewelry, I don't think he'd be able to do it. And maybe he would be, but I think it'd be very hard for him because I don't think he's successful because of the systems or the designs that he put in place.
Nice. I love it. I love the way you sort of differentiated between the two. It's awesome. A master of design is entrepreneur. I like that. So at the beginning, Mike, you said that your one thing is relationship building. Now, every business expert out there is talking about the 80-20 rule in business, right? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to do the 20% that gets you the 80% of results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Could you please right now tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Not good at? Yeah, executing for sure. I'm not good at making sure that everything that we come up with here as a company gets done 100%. Now, let me rephrase that in the right way. I'm good at making sure they get done. I'm not great at doing them myself on time every time. So I have a team that takes on those things for me. They, you know, I only do, just like everybody in the world, I only do a few things really great because you can't be great at everything. So I do a few things really great. Everything else I'm below average in. And so the guys over here, we just, today is our first day. We hired an executive assistant to help me out with making sure that, you know, I'm getting all my appointments confirmed and the people that I'm supposed to be meeting with have all the information that they need before the call or before the meeting. And after the meeting, the things are done. I'm not as thoughtful as I'd like to be. So sometimes, you know, I may forget a birthday for somebody that I don't want to forget their birthday. And it's not that I didn't want to do something nice. I thought about it. And then even after it was done, I felt terrible that I didn't do something. But my mind's just pulled in so many directions, and for some reason that doesn't work well with me. It never gets to the top of that list. So I've had to hire people to help me be successful in those areas.
So you are self-aware enough to realize your own sort of weakness there, and now you've hired somebody to build that side of you up or to fulfill that, and so that you don't have to worry about that, dropping those balls.
Yeah, I mean, you have to create a system for everything. So, you know, whatever just can't be done naturally, there has to be a system for it. So if, you know, if you're in sports and you can't just put the ball in the hoop because you're not that good. You're not the Wilt Chamberlain of today where you can just literally walk up to the hoop and put it in, right? You have to create plays and you have to create systems. And for those plays to work, you have to have the right players in those plays. So whether that means two forwards and a point guard running that play, that's what you have to have. So for us, same thing, you know, I'm self-aware enough to know that I can't master relationship building on my own because I don't have the natural intuitiveness to do a lot of these things. But if I can create a system to get a lot of those things that I want to do done, then it'll be a lot better and I'll be more successful at it.
Nice. So You've mentioned a few times systems. I mean, it's part of your differentiation even between the two styles of people. But let's move to projects if we can, and let's talk systems. So you started the company over 7 years ago because you couldn't get a job. The economy was crap and you needed to make money. It's evolved into something completely different. So the original reason was necessity, but now let's talk projects. And that could be, so it's a project within Loud Rumor, but a new project that you want to take on. I would like to know what your process is now, Mike, as the CEO in charge of a team. But is this a written process that you have? But when an idea comes to you personally or is brought to you by someone on your team, what's the process you go through to decide that that project is now worth your and your team's time, energy, and resources?
Well, we have different scheduled meeting times for different departments within the company, whether it's the marketing or the sales or the account management or whatever. And so we don't talk about ideas until those scheduled times, which is, I think, good for a couple of reasons. One, it keeps you from going all over the place all the time, every day, and not getting the stuff done that you already committed to in the last meeting. But also, I think a lot of ideas are just not really well thought out and cooked. And so sometimes we want to serve them too soon. And so if, let's say, our meetings are on Mondays, for instance, let's say you come up with a really cool idea on a Wednesday for the marketing. Well, we're not going to talk about it until following Monday. By the time that comes, we may realize that that idea is not that great, in fact, at all, or that there's a lot of holes that we need to still think through. And so I think that's one good thing. But we definitely listen to everyone. Everyone, they know they need to come with their ideas well thought out. And we think we weigh out the pros, we weigh out the cons and the risks and the reward and make sure, obviously, the reward's well worth the risk. And then from there, we start building out a system. So like we just had a meeting before you got here and we had three people in the meeting. And within a matter of 5 minutes, we had about 3 weeks worth of work that has to be done, all delegated to each of those three people. They all have their own tasks. They all know what they need to do. And now 5 minutes later, I'm on the call with you and they're working on it or putting in the agenda to get it done in 3 weeks.
Nice. I love it. I love it. I like that idea of letting the idea sort of marinate. And so then with processes, so like when you had this meeting and now people have 3 weeks worth of work, is that sort of work based on written processes already? I just want to kind of try and get an idea of how sort of written out the processes are in every step of your business at this point.
Right. So I guess that really depends on what we're building a process for. So do you mean a process that we've never done before and we want to test something new? Or do you mean something that we're already running and we want to test it in a different way?
Well, so if it's brand new, I would like to know sort of how you sort of execute on it the first time, and then at what stage does it actually get written out to a process?
Okay. If it's brand new and it's something that could be very profitable for the company and it could be costly if we don't do it right, we'll usually hire a coach that has been successful in that already and proven to be successful or has customers or clients that have done that and been successful already. We'll reach out to people that are doing it really well and we'll find out who their coaches were, or maybe we'll pay them for their time. And we'll have them give us a shortcut by paying for it by saying like, hey, tell us all the mistakes we're going to make. What are all the things we're not going to consider? And how can we just get all that out of the way? And so we'll do that. And, you know, we've paid $5,000 for a day. We've paid more, we've paid less, but, you know, learn all the systems right now that already exist. And then from there, then we'll say, okay, well, this is the template, this is the foundation for making this thing work. But we obviously have to tweak it a little bit because ours is a little different. So what do we need to make different now? But now at least we know we got the big out of the way. And then from there, yes, everything's written out. So everyone will have an agenda. We use a project management tool called Asana, and it's a great tool, allows you to collaborate on different projects. And we have teams that will work in. Everybody holds each other accountable. We always have deadlines. We're never gray. We're always black and white. So what that means is 2 to 3 weeks is never a deadline. It's December 17th or January 5th at 5 o'clock PM. That's the deadline. And if we feel like we're not going to get it done in time, something comes up along the way, that we're open and honest about it. As soon as we even feel like that's a thought, we discuss why that's the reason that that's valid. And then we will either adjust the deadline or we will adjust the workload to get there. But yeah, everything is written out. Everything is discussed and there are black and white, like nothing's gray. There's no colors, no gray. Everything's black and white when we're going to get things done and how we're going to do it.
We're never gray. It's always black and white. I love that.
Well, that's like words. There's words in here that don't fly. And these guys know, because sometimes they'll use it by accident and I'll call them out on it. But words like probably, could be, should be, maybe, might be, I'll try, we'll see, could have, would have, should have. All those are things that are very vague, and it opens up room for failure. Or if like something's not done by that time, you can say, well, I said maybe, or I said I could, or I said I'll try. You know, it's just, what will you do? I'd rather you tell me the deadline will be a week later and just tell me you'll get it done that day than tell me you'll try to get it done a week earlier. And so that's how we work on that.
I like it. And then what kind of metrics are you working on within your company? Like, I'm fascinated by the evolution. I know it's been 7 years, but the company has evolved greatly from where it started to where it is. And I mean, the platforms that you're using, lots of it didn't exist at the time.
Right.
So the evolutionary scale, like, how much do you leave open to just natural evolution, and how much is kept on like a quarterly or yearly or 5 year targets of metrics you're trying to hit?
Well, first thing I want to say is, yes, it's been 7 years, but what I will say is the first 4.5 years, it was virtually stagnant. So not a lot happened. Branding, maybe, yes. We were getting a lot of traction on social, but not a lot of revenue. But what we did in 2015 doubled what we did in 14. What we did in 16 doubled what we did in 15, literally doubled, almost exactly. And then this year, we're looking to actually triple. So we've now found what's called like the tipping point. There's actually a book called The Tipping Point, and usually it's just that one variable that'll help you start growing exponentially instead of linearly, which was great. As far as the metrics, yeah, we do a two-day retreat every year. So we just went to Prescott December like 17th or somewhere around that, like mid-December. We went down to Prescott and we all had a cabin, my entire company. We rented a cabin for 2 days. And the first day started out by recognizing our accomplishments and our wins for 2016. And when you take a full day like we did the day before that, the leadership team, and really look at, we went through the entire calendar, starting from January 1st all the way down, and looked at all the meetings we had, and we started compiling it. And we had about 80 slides worth of wins and accomplishments from 2016, which is really cool. I mean, it took us about an hour to go through our wins and accomplishments. And I think any company has it. You just don't realize it because you're always chasing something. You never take the time to look back. And then after that, then we start looking at the opportunities. You know, what are the areas that we're not as efficient in? What are the things that we can start implementing? What are our customers saying they want more of, universally, and how can we add those things? And so now we build an agenda for day two, which is basically a to-do list and a process. And then day two, we wake up and we work in teams together, you know, like two people here, four people there, depending on what the process or project is. And that second day is 100% dedicated to implementation. And we basically just build out all the processes, all the things that we decided were opportunities in day one. And then for other things that may need a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is, then we'll set deadlines for all those things and a process to get all those things done. So those are the metrics. Of course, we use our, we have things that are measurable that are great to discuss internally. Of course, we have revenue metrics and profit margin and all that stuff like any business should have. But we also have metrics that we know, if we hit these metrics, the revenue and the margins will all hit as well. So those things have to do with things that we can share offline with anybody, the community, like how many customers do we want to serve? How many testimonial videos do we want to have? How much do we want to donate to charity? How many hours do we want to dedicate to a good cause? How many people do we want to help find a healthier lifestyle through fitness? Because we got a fitness studio to sign up this many members. And so all those have specific numbers tied to them. And that allows us to see month by month if we're projecting to hit all those goals.
Yeah. The like doubling your revenue and then tripling this year is amazing. And you mentioned the tipping point and sort of the idea of the book of finding that one thing that causes that exponential growth. Can you tell us what that one thing is for you that caused that tipping point of, or like, what is your like number one sort of customer acquisition tool or source that's working for you?
Well, we've had a few tipping points this year, which is kind of cool. It's like little bursts of Nas, if you would say, right? But the first one for sure was we niched. So prior to this year, at this time last year, I should say, we were an internet marketing agency like many others where we worked with whoever you were. I didn't care if you were a dentist or chiropractor, if you need me to build your rocket ship, I'd figure it out.
Oh, wow. So I assumed, just with all your branding, I assumed you were always right into the fitness industry.
No, but that shows a commitment, right? We put out a lot of content, over 1,000 videos since then, right? So in like less than a year. And not to mention blogs regularly once a week, I think sometimes 2 to 3 times a week, podcasts, 35 episodes deep now, or 37 episodes deep now. So yeah, we've definitely, once we committed, we knew that was the deal. But yeah, we niched into the fitness industry just in February. And then we niched even further around May once we realized who our ideal customers were in that group. So we stopped working with CrossFits or personal trainers in the service side. And we really started working with more yoga, Pilates, group fitness, HIIT, that kind of stuff. And that worked really, really well. And now we're helping the other side with like online coaching or courses and stuff like that. But then another thing is definitely realizing the value of engaging with franchises. So, you know, initially we would go after every gym possible. We cold called a lot in the first couple months. And then we got involved with a franchise and we got a couple locations for that franchise. And we're like, man, that was easy. And so now we just started targeting franchises. And it's great because, you know, you get involved with one, all these franchisees are part of a private Facebook group and they all help each other. And once you do really great with one, they just start talking about you. And, you know, we have 42 locations just within one franchise. And, you know, we have like 15 of another and like 7 of another. And, you know, now we just signed with Orange Theory and that could be potentially 900. So, you know, I think finding the value of merging with franchises was another tipping point for us.
So did you choose the fitness industry or did the fitness industry choose you?
That's a cool question. It sounds like a rap song. I didn't choose the fitness industry. The industry chose me. No, you know, I think, so I got involved in fitness initially. I told you I was involved in martial arts back when I was like, you know, young. And when I was 19, I started realizing that the boys started turning into men, you know, in the ring. And so I had to take punches better. I had to hit harder. So I actually took a semester off school, which was like going for business. I took a semester off to become certified in personal training so that I can learn how to eat and train and do all this stuff myself. And towards the end of the semester, I had to take on 2 clients as part of the curriculum, and I did, and I fell in love with it. So instead of being a waiter while going to college, I started, you know, personal training, and then I quit college and I just kept doing that, and I fell into the industry and I loved it. I always loved fitness. I loved what it does. I loved the whole philosophy of, you know, working hard, getting outside of your comfort zone and getting people to see the results and changing their life, and all that stuff was really phenomenal. And I left that and pursued other stuff, and I don't know why stuff just happened. And then, you know, I came back to internet marketing, and we signed a fitness studio that was actually a neighbor of ours. They're not even a 5-minute walk away, and we killed it for them. I mean, by far more than any other customer we worked with. I think the best customer we worked with was getting like 40 leads a month, and this one got like 430 in a month and 30 in like their first day. And so we were like, wow, this is really good. And so we got another fitness studio just to see if it was a fluke. I gave them for free. I gave them advertising just to see if it would work. And it did. And I noticed they had questions along the way. And it was very easy for me to answer these questions because I was in the industry and I was high up in the industry as well. So I knew how to sell these things. I knew how to get them to be more successful at what they did. And so then we hired one more fitness studio, let's call it 3, and we did it. And so we decided to niche, and that's how we decided to go niche in the fitness industry.
I love it. I love it. And then you would think that obviously when you said you niched down and then you niched down further to like yoga and Pilates and stuff, but it's, you would think that that would make your revenue smaller. You would think that that would make your business smaller, but it's funny, you go smaller and it actually makes it bigger because now people who need that from that industry, there's one expert in it and it's you guys. Mm-hmm.
You know, and the funny thing is I was told that for like 5-6 years and
we're all
the
told
riches
that. We all ignore it.
Yeah. Well, because it's scary. It is a scary thing to do because all you're thinking about is all the opportunities you're missing because you're comparing it to all the opportunities you've had so far. And when you think about one niche, it's like we haven't had nearly as many fitness studio opportunities as we've had other opportunities combined. So we did it and it was scary. And don't get me wrong, it was costly at first. You know, the first few months, we were definitely digging into our savings. I was doing everything I could to be able to keep employees that I really liked and saw value in. And I didn't get paid for, you know, a couple months in order to make sure I can pay these guys. And, you know, it was tough. It was scary. There were moments where I was really scared. And then we found a stride, and then we found a second stride, caught a second and a third wind. And you know, now it's easily the best decision I've ever made in business.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I love it. All right, Mike, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up with one final question for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for this one because you just went through this with your team, but now I'm going to hopefully get you to do it personally. But okay. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap, which seems to be this gap that we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers. Our successes that we see personally from ourselves is always seems to be projected into the future. So in 3 months, when you hit that metric, in 6 months, when you hit that other metric you set for yourself, that's when you'll see yourself as successful. Yet you and I both know that the second before you hit that goal, you're going to set 5 or 10 bigger ones into the future, which I agree we have to do. But like walking towards the horizon, the further you walk, the further away it gets. From the outside, you look successful. From yourself, it's always in front of you. So I would love it right now, Mike, if you could stop. You've been hustling and starting stuff since your high school days. And now you've been at Loud Rumor for 7 years and you've seen massive successes. So I would love it if you could stop, turn around and look behind you. The highs, the lows, the wins, the losses. But tell me how you feel about the whole journey up until today.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm super blessed. This is a life that I think a lot of people should be blessed with. I think a lot of people deserve to have what I have. And I think a lot of times people will find it in other, you know, angles or whatever. But I mean, I get what you're saying with that whole thing. You don't realize how much you're accomplishing. You know, write your goal. I write my goals down every morning and every night. I begin and end every day writing my goals down. When you do that, you don't keep moving the needle forward. Because you're excited to hit it. I think a lot of people keep moving the needle forward because they realize the initial needle they set wasn't good enough to get what they want now. And so if you don't write your goals down, they'll always change. So write them down. It's okay to set new goals, but hit them first and celebrate. And no, man, this is the coolest journey. I hope everybody gets to live the life I've lived.
Excellent. Excellent. I love it. All right, Mike, we've got to talk about the business in passing, but could you give the listener sort of the elevator pitch about Loud Rumor?
Yeah, basically, we are a massive lead generation company for fitness studios and gyms, and it's 100% true. I mean, massive. We're talking a few hundred leads per month for the gyms that we work with and fitness studios, and it's all supported with great content and coaching on how you can do more with those leads so you can be super successful and get the most out of your spend.
Excellent, excellent. Loudrumor.com is the website. I believe you guys are at Loudrumor on Twitter. Also on this episode, we talked about the Tipping Point book by Maxwell, something like that. I'm trying to think of it as I say it. Malcolm Gladwell and Asana as well. It's a free tool built by one of the original creators of Facebook, actually.
Right.
Brilliant tool. So I'll link to all that in the show notes on Hack the Entrepreneur for you when you're done working out, jogging, working, whatever it is. But Mike, once again, man, thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for sharing. And just please keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks a lot. Hey, you asked a lot of really great questions, too. I actually enjoyed really being on the show. It was fun.
As entrepreneurs, we know the value of good branding. From social media posts to blog post images, solid branding makes us stand out from our competitors, increases the perceived value to our customers, and adds another level of professionalism to our businesses. But it's not easy for people like you and I who aren't designers. Luckily, Snappa was built to make graphic design easy for entrepreneurs, to up their branding game, and to take their business to the next level. Go to snappa.io/hack and get a 14-day free trial, no credit card necessary, just for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. That's snappa.io/hack. Mike, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun, and I appreciate you stopping by and sharing so openly. So we've reached the point in the show where I need to go back through the conversation and listen to it. Listen to it as you got to listen to it. And so I did. I went back through the conversation, and I was looking for something. I wasn't sure what I was looking for, but I was looking for something. So I went back, and then I went back again, and then I went back again. That third time that I went back through the conversation, there was one thing that Mike said to me. There was one thing that he said to me that stood out so very, very clearly. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
A lot of ideas are just not really well thought out and cooked. And so sometimes we want to serve them too soon. And so if, let's say, our meetings are on Mondays, for instance, let's say you come up with a really cool idea on a Wednesday for the marketing. Well, we're not going to talk about it until following Monday. by the time that comes, we may realize that idea is not that great, in fact, at all, or that there's a lot of holes that we need to still think through.
And that's the hack. Mike. I love this. I love this idea of, it's like letting the idea sort of marinate or simmer, or it's an excellent way to get rid of that whole shiny object syndrome where we kind of can tend to jump from one thing to the next and never actually accomplish or complete anything. So whether you have a team or you are flying solo at this point, it's kind of irrelevant. The idea being that don't allow yourself to take action on an idea immediately. Let it simmer. Let it sort of sit and see if it excites you as much, and if it seems to hold as much value a week from now or 2 weeks from now or a month from now, whatever that sort of timeline is. So Mike's is every week. So if it's on a Wednesday, the ideas come up with, it's not going to be discussed till next week, which is already enough time that it might not be the best idea. You might realize that. But if you're doing this, you could do this on a little bit longer time scale if you wish, like maybe 2 weeks or a month. If something still excites you after 2 weeks or a month and still seems like a good idea of something worth your time, energy, and resources, then yes, go for it. But this is how to stay focused and sort of determined to accomplish what you've already decided is the best sort of direction for you to be heading right now, and to not constantly be getting sidetracked and bouncing around, because that's so essential to avoid that whole shiny object and just like, oh, I should do this now, and then I should do this. And so I love this idea, right? This idea that not everything is that well thought out. Give it the time to simmer. We've talked in the show where people set up either like a written journal, you can write down your ideas, or you can set up a Trello board, set up a Google Doc, anything that makes it easy for you to just kind of put down those ideas and then ignore them, and then have that set period to come back, revisit those ideas, and decide which ones are still worth your time, energy, and resources. Mike, thank you for that. All right, hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Head over there, check it out. I'm going to have notes for Mike's episode. We'll have links to him on social media, loudrumor.com, as well as I'll get some links to Asana for you, the Tipping Point book as well. And you can check all those out and get onto the email address. Give me your email address while you're over there on the website is what I was meaning to say. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really, truly 100% appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.